On page Kufnun Vav Nachshos Avreichim, just out of the 12th parak, the Mid of Tmimus. Up to the third paragraph on the page. Let's just read quickly to get back there. The first two little ones. Kedelias Chasid. Let's start the parak again. Kedelias Chasid Bal Nefesh Lo Eris Rakshus Ba Avoid It Sichim Lazorik Amachal Hayoyim Shloila Rachakis Nefesh. To be a real Chasid, the Rebbe is saying that a person has to be connected to Avodas Hashem the entire year, not to be the entire day, not to be merachek the nefesh, not to distance oneself from his nefesh throughout the course of the day, even when it comes to inyani rishus, things that are not Avodas Hashem, learning or davening and mitzvahs, but whatever he's doing during the day, not to be merachek his nefesh, not to distance himself from his nefesh. And Lamaisa, how does that play itself out in the behavior of a person, in the midas of a person? So the Rebbe says, Tanayigis Asim Chava Pashtus Usmimus Bechol Ninecha. That's what we were talking about last week. To conduct oneself in a way of Pashtus and Tmimus in everything that the person does. Ki Tmimus Himam Shalas HaNefesh Al HaAdam HaMaisa. Even though during the day one perhaps cannot actively be involved in Avodas Hashem, learning and davening and so on. He has to do school or work, whatever it might be. But when a person conducts himself in a way of tmimus and pashtus, so he says that tmimus is memshel sanefesh ala adab ma'aseh, as we spoke about by Riches last week. Tmimus is when the nefesh of a person is ruling over him. Is ruling over all that he does. That's tmimus. Va'amumius, he choysa ha'nefesh v'amshal sasecha. And this type of shrewdness or cleverness, that's choysa ha'nefesh. That's when a person does not behave in a way that's spontaneous and true to himself, but rather everything's with the cheshvan, everything's with the memshal sasecha, where the person's intellect, where the person's cheshbainis are ruling over everything. And he's not talking about seichel ha-nefesh, we spoke about this a lot. Seichel ha-bamen ha-nefesh, of course, is a very important thing. When the seichel itself is under the guidance of the person's nefesh, and the seichel itself is an expression of who he is. Masha'ena came when the seichel ha-olam. Seichel ha-olam. When a person lives not by what his nefesh tells him, and not by what the seichel that comes from the nefesh tells him, but rather the seichel ha'olam, the seichel of the world, how to impress others, what people expect him to be like, what he calculates as being that which is would make him most respected and most admired, and so on. Klema minhagim v'nimusei ha'olam v'anoshev. According to the minhagim and the nimusim, the manners of the world, shekarim l'zeh seichel k'fiyin aysam medabim chayshim misnagim. Es Hashem armumius. Let's continue. This word, this term, armumius, which shrewdness, a crookedness, a little something, a cleverness, a shrewdness, a crookedness. Es Hashem armumius sh'aim ma'anu b'zeh. Ein kavanaseinu al divrei sheker b'lvad. Rebbe says, I'm not only talking about outright lies, that this need of armumius causes a person to mamish to lie. Ein kavanaseinu al divrei sheker b'lvad. Although, of course, that's included in armumius, but that's not all I'm talking about, sheker mamish. Rak al reishis ha-sheker shabai. What the Rebbe says, what I'm talking about is the beginning of the sheker, the beginning of the lie, the root of the sheker. Not the outright lie, but the root. Al reishis ha-sheker shabai. Va'asiba shemeviyatei la'odam la'daber v'lachshoiv divrei sheker. The underlying root and cause that would ultimately bring a person to say things and to think things that are mamash sheker. What's the underlying shirish of that? The beginning of sheker. In many cases, it will eventually become mamash sheker. in what the person thinks and what the person says. But what's the shorish of the sheker? Klemer amatzav hanefesh v'kilkula. What we're going to discuss, he says, is the matzav hanefesh, that condition of a person's soul, and the kilkul. What damage is there? What's wrong with a person? Sha'al yodai nasa ish l'shakran. That as a result of this imperfection, as a result of this problem, that's a deeper problem, ultimately the person becomes a shakran, becomes a liar. Ad shemach shavaisav dibur v'cholin yonif m'ukalim, to the point that all of his thoughts and his words and everything that he does are all m'ukalim. They're all twisted. They're all crooked. Nothing is 100% the way that it really is. Everything is crooked and twisted. Lo chayim, lo nimtzayim v'lo amitim. That it's not really his life. His words are not his words. His thoughts are not his thoughts. His actions are not his actions. So he's not really alive. It's not called life. It's somebody else's life. It's something that he's pretending to be, or he would like to be, or he wants other people to think that he is, and so on. But it's not Be'emes. It's not him. Chazal say that the seal of Hashem is truth. Chayisma shel Kadosh Baruch Hu Emes. V'alkol ha'olam yesh chayisma hazeh. And this chayisun, this seal of Hashem's Baruch, the chayisma shel Kadosh Baruch Hu Emes, this chayisun, this seal is on all of creation. V'alkol ha'olam yesh chayisma hazeh. Hatzemach shehut sameach, the plant that is growing. Hatzemach shehut sameach. Yesh bo metzias chayis nefesh atzemachas. It grows because it is faithful to that metzias of life that it has, that comes from the nefesh atzemachas. That koyach that's called nefesh atzemachas, and the plant is entirely honest about itself, and it is faithful to that metzias, that chias that is within it. Vuhu emes v'hatzemach ametzuya. But on the other hand, when you look at a painting of the plant, hatzemach ametzuya, a drawing or a painting of a plant, ashenaseh min shava kedemus hatzemach, or there's some wax figure, or some sort of a statue or a figure of a plant. It's a sheker, it's a lie. The picture, the painting, the drawing, the statue, whatever it is, it's making believe that it's a flower or a tree. But it's a sheker, it's a lie. Emes hu hametzias. Emes is reality. Emes is metzias. That's the emes. Metzias is the emes. Emes hu hametzias. V'sheker hu ha'efes. And falsehood, sheker is hu ha'efes, is the opposite. It's non-reality. She'en nimsa. It simply doesn't exist. She'en nimsa. Kushta koi. Chazal say, truth is something that is. Kushtakai, truth exists. It exists, it is. Sheker loikai. Sheker, falsehood loikai. It isn't. It makes believe that it is. It looks like this, presents itself as if it is. It's a virtual reality, but it's not a reality. Sheker loikai. Emes hu b'chinas chayim. Emes is that quality that's called life. It's alive. Emes u'b'chinas chayim. Emes is alive. Emes chay v'kayim. V'sheker hu misitra d'maisa. Sheker, falsehood, comes from the side of death. Misitra d'maisa. She'ein kan lo etzem lo hoyve v'lo nimtza. There is no existence here. There's nothing that's present and there's nothing that's here. Sheker, shikr is misitra demoisa. Hametziyasu ha'emes. So Chazal say, Chayis Mishakadosh Baruch Hu emes, the seal of Hashem is truth. It means that everything that exists has that seal of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, of its Metzius, and being what it is. And Metzius is true. V'ha'ish shebechol inyonav, ma'isav ha'machshavaisav, yesh Metzius. That person, who in all of his, in everything in his life, in all of his actions, and all of his thoughts, yesh Metzius, there is Metzius, Shanafshay nimseis behem, that his nefesh, his soul, is in those things. Zehu emes u'tmimes. That is called an emes dikah person. That's a tmimes dikah person. With the true mitzias of who he is, the seal, the chaysim of himself, of who he is, and the emes of who he is in every single thing that he thinks, that he says, that he does. Zehu emes u'tmimes. That doesn't mean, obviously, if a person like is standing on the train and he looks at someone and he thinks that person has a horrible odor, if next to him that he turns to him and says, "I want you to know that you really smell bad." That's not what he's talking about. Tmimus, because the nefesh of a person has to sincerely want to conduct that person in a way that is kind and compassionate to other people. To say to somebody, "You smell," the guy says, how can you say that? You know, that's very hurtful to me. See, so I just felt I should be honest with you. And I just learned, you know, about being tmimistic and honest, and my nefesh was telling me that you smell bad, and I just thought I would share that with you. That's not honesty, that's cruelty. And obviously, I was not talking about not ruling over one's negative traits and those destructive meters. And that doesn't mean, well, I feel like doing an Avera, I'm supposed to be tmimistic, emes and tmimis demands that I carry out this Avera. That's chas v'shalom, it's not true. It's the mocham of a person's life is to overcome and to use the seichel, to be magbe the seichel al haguf, and not to chas v'shalom be nichshul in these things. That's not what the Rebbe is talking about. We'll see more what he's saying, but this mida of a person, the tmimis of that person would be to acknowledge that there's something that bothers him, and to sincerely make an effort to do the Ratzon Hashem, and not to hurt and not to insult, and even if it means, let's say, getting to a different place in the train so as not to stay next to that person, to do it in a way that's discreet, that would not be insulting or hurtful. The Rebbe is talking about the inner quality of tmimus. The b'chol inyan of ma'isa machshavos of yesh metzius. It's not demyanus. It's not make believe. It's not a fantasy. It's real. Shenafsha nimtzes behem. Zo emes u'tmimus. Hatzemach tzemech b'tmimus u'pashtus. The plant grows in tmimus and in pashtus. The plant grows without any cheshbon of how do I look. The plant is not making a cheshbon of do I look good? Do I look good? Am I beautiful? It's the plant grows between us and pashtas. In the way of tmimus and pashtus, leila shum kavanu pnei chitzaynis, it has no ulterior motive. It has no cheshbon. Rak b'pnei hametzius shebekir bay. It grows for one reason, because that's what it is, and that's exactly what it does, because it's consistent with its metzius of being a tzemeach. Or b'nei nafshay shedechakdei lispashit lizgadol. Because the nefesh hatzameach, that soul of the plant, the nefesh hatzomachas, that thing that's called the quality of tzmicha inside the plant, compels it to grow and to move forward. The Gam Hayelad Misnaig B'chol and Yonav Apashtus Atmimus, and that's what makes children. That's what makes children so easy to love. The child is Misnaig B'chol and Yonav Apashtus Atmimus. The child does not make believe. The child is not presenting himself or his thoughts or his feelings in some contrived, artificial way. The child is very, very, because the child is very loved. The child is filled with chen, because the child is also faithful to who he is, to his nefesh. And that's what makes something beautiful and loved, without trying to be, without making that effort to be loved. The child's not trying to be cute. The child's not trying to be be pretty or cute. The child is, and it's that authenticity. It's the child being faithful to himself, to herself, in Pashas and Tamimis, that makes the child, that gives the child such chayin. The Gam Yelam is not becholim it, but Pashas and Tamimis kfi mitzias hanefesh v'spashtusa. According to the mitzias of the nefesh, and it's his pashtus. Vim gam ha'ish misnai b'chol inyon of machshavoy sevak menafshay. And even if an adult conducts himself in everything that he does and all of his thoughts, if he would do that rak benafshay, azafim hu chacham, then even if he's very, very smart, tamim v'amitihu. This is a midah that you see by tzaddikim. Makes no difference how brilliant the person is. There's a pashtus and a tmimus that's unbelievably endearing, that's so beloved and so endearing in the tzaddik, because everything's with a tmimus. Tamim v'amitihu. Everything is honest. Everything is filled with tmimus and pashtus. Not with all kinds of cheshbonis and amimius and crookedness and cleverness and shrewdness about how to act and what to say and how to be. V'me'enu misnaig b'pashtus kfi sheyaitze milibo v'navshay imkein ein mitzius bay. A person who is not misnaig in pashtus, a person who is not, who does not have this midah of tmimus, and he doesn't act according, speak and think according to what comes from his heart and his nefesh. Im kein ein mitzias bay. It means that there's no mitzias. He's a painting of a person. He's a picture of a person. It's just a picture. It's a picture for people to see, or a picture that makes himself feel better about himself. So he has a picture, and he presents himself a certain way because he wants to look that way to others. But there's no mitzias. He's not a real person. It's a wax figure. Stop. It's not a real person. Kim ein mitzias bay. Ovechol ma'isav yisayt ha'sheker krab bay. And in everything that he does is the yisayt ha'sheker. It's all built. All that he does, it's all with the different cheshbainis of what others will think, or how I'll feel, and so on and so forth. His entire life, everything that he does, is built on the side of Sheker. Even though you might not be able to catch him on an actual open lie, like to say that to delude himself to say, or try to trick others by saying that this tree is actually a stone, or that the stone is actually a tree. It doesn't come out in such a way, because that's also a cheshman, because the cheshman is, I don't want people to catch me that I'm a liar. If he could get away with it, he might make the stone into a tree. And if it would be to his, and if it would be to his advantage to paint the stone as a tree, or the tree as a stone, he would try to do it, if he wouldn't be afraid of getting caught, because then he's afraid that people will think that he's a liar. And he does not want people to think that he's a liar. So he tries to make all kinds of things up to also to try to maintain the image that he has of being an honest person. So he doesn't come right out and say, Eitz is Evan and Evan is Eitz. He doesn't say things that would be obvious to people as lies. Even a person who does say such a prosta lie, to say that a piece of wood is a stone, yisoid veracious a sheker shabapile, but the beginning of such a sheker till it became totally outrageous, till it became such a thing that Imamish says open lies. But the racious, the yisoid and the racious, the beginning of that sheker, until he came to a point where he was mamish saying outright lies. It comes from this terrible reality that the person is living a life that's not real. He's living a life that's from Yisitra Demaisa. That comes from the side of death, Yisitra Demaisa. He's not a real person. He's not, because life is the same way with the plant. That the life of the plant, the mitzias of the plant, is what it is. The mitzias of a person is who he is. And if the person is living not according to who he is, so then it's not a mitzias. Then he's not really alive. It's misitra demaisa. It's from the side of death. Ve'ein mitzias, ve'ein nefesh b'chol ma'isav machshavosav. And there's no mitzias. There's no mitzias, and there's no nefesh. There's no reality, and there's no soul. B'chol ma'isav machshavosav, and all of his actions and all of his thoughts. The whole entertainment industry, which we spoke a little bit about last time, art and entertainment and all of this, which the whole tachlis, let's say, filmmakers will tell you that they're simply trying to portray the realities of life in their films and so on. But there's no metzias and there's no nefesh. It's all contrived. It's all in studios. It's all scripts. It's all make-believe. And the actors are not really liked the way that they're acting. And the filmmaker doesn't really care in the least bit about the film that he's making. It's not who he is. It's just the idea that he came up with it, that of some film that would be interesting or successful. And even if it's something that is representing that which he's... That which he really believes in, which that would already be a bigger madrega, but it's all acting. It's all with actors and actresses and a script, and it's all something which is not alive and it's not mitzias. And that industry, that way of entertainment, and films and so on, all of that as it evolved over the years has taken society and civilization further and further and further away from the nefesh, further away from the soul, as has happened, of course, with fiction and with novels and so on and literature. It's all painting images of life that are not alive, pictures of life that are not alive. Photography and film, all of this, with all of the advantages and all of the nice things that it's brought to civilization, but it's exactly what they call it nowadays when they say it's just a virtual reality and it's not real. And from what I understand, so now they have television shows that are not anymore, I don't know what they call it, but they call it virtual reality, is that what it's called?
Reality shows
where it's not, like in a studio, where they get scripts, maybe, I don't know exactly what it is, but live things in homes or people situations where they take films and they I don't know what exactly, but it's not anymore. They have shows that are not like prepared or something like that, and that these are very popular now. These kind of reality shows, I guess, about different people's lives. I don't know. So these shows. So that's supposed to be something which is more interesting. I guess people are getting sick and tired of a certain kind of a thing, so they want to be able to now, in a way that is totally that is to make more money, and to make more money by other people watching people in their embarrassing inyanim and doing things that otherwise normal people would be embarrassed to be filmed. People have always had a certain hope for privacy and for personal dignity, and this is probably a new direction that the hashchos of Hollywood is heading in, a new direction of the sheker, of the lie, with a new claim that this is the truth. In other words, now Hollywood is going to say, Ad kan, until now we were lying. So it's Gone with the Wind was a lie. And we're sorry. That was a lie. Because we got, Clark Gable and Janet Leigh. Well, I don't know who they were. Clark Gable, I know for sure. Yeah, I remember that name. But we got these people, we got these Choshev actors, and we paid them a lot of money, and they were making, that whole thing. So we're reminded that Gone with the Wind was a sheker, and all of that was a sheker, and that we did that in the studio, and we gave them scripts, and they were just very talented liars. We're liars, and we were lying, and all of the people that we hired were just a bunch of liars. It was all made up, it was all a lie. And we're sorry, kiddies, but The Wizard of Oz, never happened, and we really apologize about that, there was no Indian E.T. come home from another planet, some creature, or it just never happened, and we're really sorry. Just we were greedy, selfish filmmakers and producers and writers and so on, and we just wanted to create images that would excite you, so that you'd pay a lot of money and come to the theater and buy our films and so on. But we're not doing that anymore. We don't want to do that anymore. We don't want to mislead you anymore. Now we're taking we're just filming people as they really are. And that's what we have. I don't see it on my glasses. You need for a minion. One? So we're not filming things that are not true. From now on, we're only going to film things Kfi Hametzius v'hanefesh shel Hametzius. And now this is going to be from the Sitra d'chaim. This is going to be from the side that's called life. And a person that's a little bit of a Baal Seichel and a Baal Regesh knows that this is just the next step. This is the next frightening step in the lie and the delusion and the bizyonis of the Tzelem Elokim. And I don't know how popular these shows are. I don't know how widespread these shows are. But this is just another step in the sheker. It's just using other foolish people, people who would be foolish enough, and people who would be silly and foolish, and I don't know if those people get paid. I don't know, but people would be silly and foolish enough to be used by the increasingly greedy writers and producers and filmmakers. To participate in their shkarim, in their lies, and everything is that we're just trying to portray the human condition. Where these filmmakers, these people who are in this or whatever, writing these kind of these novels of Christ, they see themselves as being the most honest people in the world. They think that the rest of us are liars, and that they're the only ones that are trying to really, really show the world what reality is. But this is all from the Sitra D'Maaseh, Rachman Litzlan. Look, the newspaper exists in order to report reality. That's why the newspaper claims it has. What else would a person? Why do you need the news or the newspaper? Isn't the news supposed to be telling you this is what happened? This is the Metzius. That's what the newspaper is supposed to be doing. And the greatest makar of shekel on earth are newspapers. It's a funny thing. It's all you have to do is to tell the truth. In other words, that's why you exist. You're supposed to be just describing the Metzius. You're supposed to describe Metzius. That's all the reason. That's the only reason that there's a newspaper, is to describe Metzius. And the newspapers, all the sheker, all the shkarm, and all the havalim of the world are coming from the newspapers, and the smell, the stench that the news, that the newsmaker, that the people, the news, the radio, the television, and the newspapers are supposed to be just taking pictures. But this is reality. You're just standing there with a pen and a pad and writing what they see. So they write that Israelis are torturing Palestinians. They just write it down. They write down what they see. And this is the sheker. The biggest sheker of the universe comes from there. So all misitra the ma'isach mosav. The emet siyus ve'nefsh b'chol ma'is machshavosav. That's where you see that. You know, advertising. What is advertising? The whole malach of advertising is a malach of shaker. And each one will say, "No, I really believe in this product. I really, really believe in this product." So the whole malach is a malach of shaker. It's putting things up in windows to get unsuspecting fools to be drawn into the place and to spend their money. It's all sheker. Kol chine shel hayelad, all of the chen the child has. Kol chine shel hayelad, all of the chen, all of the charm and the beauty of the child. Kol chine shel hayelad, hu al shehu tamim hu pashit. It's because the child is tamim and pashit. The tmimus and the pashtus of the child. That's the source of all of the chayin of the kid. Tamim and pashit. Kshemedabrim imai, when you speak to a child, ma'agishim ki'ilu amnafshay ha'inu medabrim. When you speak to the child, you feel as if you're speaking directly to the soul of the child. And that soul is only enclosed in the little body, the little face, and so on, the mouth, the eyes, but you feel that the soul of the child is speaking to you. And we teach the child, you don't have to cry if you're upset. So the child, obviously, the adults don't want to go out of their minds. So you tell the kid not to cry, just because he wants something, you don't cry. But everybody knows that the Rebbe Zushi said that that's the highest madrega, to be able to cry for wanting something. But obviously we're not talking about letting go and not controlling oneself. But from the time that we teach children not to cry and not to say that, not to do. So from the beginning, we're teaching children to be, not to be authentic, not to be real. Which we understand. She's saying, I'm not teaching them not to be honest. I'm teaching them that there's a civilized way of behaving. You can't walk around screaming and crying just because you want a candy. You have to ask in a nice way. So the kid learns from the beginning, we understand why, but the kid learns from the beginning that I have to act. In order for me to get the candy, I have to begin to buy into Hollywood, right? So the kid learns that in order for me to get the candy, if I'm going to scream and start stomping my feet and throw myself on the floor for the candy, so then the authority is not going to give it to me. So the child learns that there's a mahalach, and the mahalach, the parents say that in order for you to get the candy, you have to act like a mensch. So act like a mensch. In other words, you're not a mensch, but you have to act like a mensch. So then the child is burning up inside with a desire to throw himself on the floor and kick and scream, but he holds himself back. He holds himself back and he acts civilized. For around 30 seconds, he'll ask in a nice way, "Could I please have a candy, mommy?" And depending on how good an actor he is, how long he can hold that scene and follow the script, so he begins to feel that this is the source of his hatzlacha in the world. To be able to raise the child in such a way where he learns to be consistent, where he learns that to conduct oneself in a menschliche way, where he learns that that is something which is the Ratzon Hashem, that's good, and he sincerely and honestly sees that as a way of life, that's a very chashuv thing. But the chen of the child, the charm of a child, and the beauty of a child doesn't last for too long. If you're of the group that puts your child in front of a television from an early age, so then it's pretty much doomed on a very, very large scale, in a very large scale way from the beginning, where the child from the start of his or her life is watching images that are not real, and is living a life that's totally bound to anti-Metzius, to non-Metzius, to the cartoons and the shows and whatever it is, and whatever way that reality is being portrayed, so the children are disappointed. How come when they go outside, like dogs don't talk to them, and all sorts of funny things that are happening in the cartoons and the television, how come they're not actually experiencing those things? Where the world is moving increasingly towards a place of total madness. The chain of a child comes from the tmimus and the pashtus. And you feel that when you talk to the child. When you ask the child something, the child listens to that question, and the child hears it, and the question reaches all the way into the nefesh of the child. Not, okay. What does this guy want me to say? Like when you're going for your interview for your big job, right? You got this interview after like years of schlepping this job, that night you got the big interview. So you ask like 100 people, what do they want to hear? What do these people want to hear? What are they looking for? What are they looking for? When you're asking an adult who's not a tweemistic person, you're asking him a question, you're always interviewing him. He's always being interviewed. He always feels that there's a microphone and there's a camera, and he's being interviewed. There's always an interview. A child is never being interviewed. That's what makes them such fantastic. That's what makes them so fantastic to talk to. That's what's so wonderful to talk to. Okay, many times I mentioned that show when we were kids. There was a show on television, Art Linkletter, that at the end of the show, he would have a bunch of kids, I remember, on these chairs, and he would ask them questions. And they were saying the cutest things. Just asking impossible things. They were saying embarrassing things about the house, you know. They were just saying like what mom and dad do. I mean, nowadays you couldn't have such thing, you understand. Because people are doing such strange things. So, that was like a big thing in America, Art Linkletter. That part of the show, like at the end, when he would just go and ask kids stuff. His kids would say these cute things. They would say these very cute things. It was the truth. Because children are not interviewed. Therefore, they don't act differently. When you talk to the kid like this, Tom, if you'd be standing in the middle of a midbar and talking to the kid, and you're talking to the kid in front of 1,000 people, it doesn't look any differently. He's not preparing for his interview. He's not preparing for it. It doesn't mean you go up to the kid and you say, okay, listen. Listen, Moshe, I'm putting this little microphone on you. I'm putting this little clip on you, this little microphone. When I ask you these questions, I want you to tell me what you think. It's not nispal at all from any of these things. It's just, might get scared, he doesn't know what this is, and so on. It's not nispal from it, it doesn't mean anything to him. So some guy's trying to make money off of him by interviewing kids. But he's not nispal from this stuff at all. And when you ask the child a question, Hashaylach Hederis Adonavshai. And that's, you see that when you talk to a tzaddik, that's how it is. And the child's answer is not, how can I impress this person and sound like really smart? How can I sound really intelligent? Or what could I do that would be appealing to this person? The child responds from the nefesh. And that comes in a way that's tshuva tmima upshuta. It is simple, it is pure, and it's simple, according to who the child is. That's why the second that you're interviewing an adult, the act of interviewing an adult, let's say for publication, whether it's in a book or a film, whatever it is, the second you interview the person, unless it's a tzaddik yisayid olam, the second you're interviewing the person, it's no longer the person. That's the irony of it. That's the sheker of media and the sheker of that whole, whether it's a documentary, whether it's whatever it is. The second that you're interviewing the person, you're no longer hearing from the person. Unless it's a very, very big tzaddik. You know, it's like we were talking the other day about that film clip of the Minchas Eloza saying Shabbos, Shabbos, that they took a film of the Minchas Eloza. And he was upset because he didn't know that they were filming him. He just agreed. He thought they were just taping him. And he agreed to that. Then he found out afterwards. My brother-in-law told me he was a great-grandson of the Minchas Eloza. He told me that he had a terrible akpada. And I mentioned the other day that the filmmaker died within a very short time because of the akpada of the Minchas Eloza. That they were taking pictures of him and that Saudi didn't want to have. And the only reason he agreed is they wanted to put a microphone to the Rabbi, to the Minchas Eloza. It was just his yahrzeit, his bais siddur. They put a microphone to him and the only reason he was masking because he didn't want to. He was only masking because they said that because of our brothers in America, maybe you could say something to the Yid in America. So then he just said, he just started to cry. Start to cry Shabbos. If you keep Shabbos, keep Shabbos, Shabbos. That was the interview with the Minchas Eloza. I don't know if you saw it. It's on the computer. You could read it. It's the interview. That's the interview of the Minchas Eloza. Now hold it right there, Rabbi. Let's straighten out your tie a little bit. And this is what we would like to get across to the people in America. Maybe something like Shabbos, they'd be interested in. That would be a nice subject to talk about Shabbos, because they're not really keeping so much over there in America these days. So would you like to talk about Shabbos? Is that good, Rabbi? Very good. Okay. Okay, fellas, you have that. Rabbi, you ready? Go. The second you're interviewing the person, it's no longer the person. That's why it's all a sheker. Because he's saying, we're now going to hear from Rabbi so-and-so and his thoughts on the Parshas HaShavua. It's finished. That's the end of it. That's the end of it.
But when someone's talking to a tzaddik, it's easy to understand how when you're talking to that tzaddik, you feel like that conversation that you're having with the tzaddik is the most important thing going on in that tzaddik's life, because that's how a tzaddik makes you feel like the Rebbe saying here, like it.
Yeah.
But then when, let's say my friends and I talk about a particular tzaddik and say, oh, it's always so amazing to talk to him because you feel like it's the most important thing in his life. We always say, yeah, but, you know, what he does all day is he's learning, he's davening, he's giving chizik to Yid, but we're so sophisticated. It's always, and we're like, we're in business, we're involved in this, we're involved in this. So, is it because of our time that like we're not able to have that same level of total involvement? And because basically, like the Rebbe's saying, like when you talk to a tzaddik, it's exactly like the Rebbe's describing here.
Yeah.
But whenever we talk about why is it different in our lives, it's always because we think, oh, we're so sophisticated, we can't be at that level of the tzaddik. But that can't possibly be the answer, that we're so sophisticated.
The sophistication is exactly the armonious that the Rebbe's talking about. Because we say to ourselves like this, that if I had been, this is what you and I, we say like this to ourselves, all of us, we say, if I'd be in that Rebbe's shoes, I'd also be a tzaddik. If I'd be in the Rebbe business, then I could do that. But I'm not in the Rebbe business. I'm in another business. And in my business, from the very beginning, I was taught that if you want to be successful, you have to be sophisticated, and you have to, they don't say it outright, maybe they do, I don't know, but you have to be a lawyer. You have to lie. You have to sell your product.
Yeah, I'm saying not even in business, like in other words, even just like in the regular world, if we're having a normal conversation, is a person talking, is he relating to me in an Indian of Parnassa?
No, but that's what I'm saying, Shemi, I know. But we've become so conditioned to that. We realize, and we've been taught from the beginning, that in order to be successful at what you're doing, you have to be sophisticated. And that carries over from work and from school, where we're studying things that are not at all interesting to us, and we have to show on the test that we're interested in it. So here you're taking math for the entire year. You couldn't care less whether these numbers stim. The last thing on earth that you could care about is, well, it was enough committed to me whether these numbers stim. I mean, I don't care. They do, they don't. It's a triangle, it's a chvais, it's a rectangle. It's enough committed to me. The main thing is that I get to my bus on time. So from the very beginning. So then what happens in the beginning is that you tell this kid, you know, you have to take math. So right away you have to, is ready to say that. I mean, why do you have to take myth? Everybody takes myth. So you can't live without myth. Even to tell the truth, Ad Hayam, I'm not sure why I did any of that. But and it's already been many years. But you have to take myth. So the kids say that take myth. And not only that, you have to be very good at it. You better not come home with less than like, you know, whatever, 95 on the report card. Not only does the kid have to spend so much time from the beginning doing something, studying something, and thinking about something that he's not at all interested in, has no shaychus to him, he also has to give the impression to the teacher that he has a very deep shaychus to it, which spells out like in a successful exam. Or else the teacher says something like to his parents, like, your son doesn't care about math. And the kid's saying, why don't you ask me? I don't care about math. I'm just afraid of you guys. So I have to make believe that. So it was one thing, you know, to come to class and I have to make believe that I'm a good boy, that I want to listen to math. I don't want to listen to math. I'm screaming inside of me to get out to the playground. And I don't know why this person is boring me. And making my life miserable by standing up here for whatever it is, 40 minutes, or by the blackboard, writing all types of nonsense on the board that's totally irrelevant to my life. And I'm only doing that because I was told that I have to do it, or else I'm not a mensch. So, or I'm not going to get candy. And as you get older, candy means, you know, a car, or it means a job, or it means a good wife, or it means a, you know, a pretty wife, and a girlfriend, whatever it is that's the prize at that point in life. So, but I have absolutely no interest in at all. So, and then when it comes to the exam, you have to be able to convince the teacher that you really care about this. Don't you remember taking classes in college that the material that you were taking was the most absolutely, it was the most irrelevant nonsense? You couldn't dream up of such a thing. If you wanted to write a Hollywood movie, you couldn't think of such nonsense.
Sociology.
Yeah, I wasn't going to name that subject because I once did that many, many years ago when I was, and I don't know if that came out on the tape because I don't want to get in trouble, because invariably there's going to be one sociologist that's listening, you know. But that happened to me. That happened to me. Yeah, that happened to me years ago. That I was giving a shiur in front of hundreds of people in the White Shul, and I just was picking up like something that's like total Irishkeit, and I said sociology, for instance. And I got a call on Shabbos from a person that said, I just wanted to thank you because you humiliated me in front of all of my people. That's what I've been studying and teaching for the last 40 years of my life. And you today on Shabbos, you humiliated me in front of all my friends and family. Thank you. Huh? That's I got that phone call on Shabbos. So that you just brought back very bad memories when you said sociology. but it happens to be the best examples of that I can think of. I apologize to anybody that's that would be offended by that. Right. But the whatever that subject, whatever it has. So I guess I guess that was you. I also had a similar. I never took the class, but I had a friend of mine. There's a roommate of mine that was taking that. And I leafed through the book for around 15-20 minutes, and I think I said something like, "Look," I said to my friend, "we're both wasting our lives here, but you're really, really doing a very big job of this, more than me. It's like, well, I'm taking something else." So I'm sure he thought that, I said, "Look, this is all a waste of time, but you're majoring in that, and I'm not majoring in that. I'm doing something else, But you think back and you get some teacher like walking like back and forth, and they don't care about it either. They just, if you get a sincere one, then it's more tolerable because at least there could be a certain pastus and intimus in that teacher, that professor that cares about whatever the subject, that cares about the students. But when you get one that everybody has tenure, you get somebody that's just. That's mamish from the Sifra Demaisa. It's almost as if you had a wax statue standing in front of the class with a little tape recorder in the mouth, just saying something. Couldn't care less whether the kids understand or don't understand. There's no nafkamina whether you understand or you don't understand. They don't read the test. They don't mark the test. So kids do it. The whole thing is from Sheker and Sifra Demaisa. But even if it's a sincere professor that's marching up and down, telling you that the most important thing in life is to understand. Is to understand, why they've been voting a certain way in France for the past 25 years. And you're sitting there and you begin to wonder, why is this so important? What difference does it make if they vote like that in France? I don't even care, as long as there are no Jews there, they could blow up the whole place. There's no nothing. What do I care? So then when it comes to the exam, you have to give the impression that there's nothing that's more important to in your life than the voting patterns in France. And you have to write an essay on how they vote in France. You have to write a whole essay on it. And the essay has to be convincing so that the professor thinks that you really care about how they vote in France. So everything's a sheker. It's all a sheker. And then I remember when I was, so I was in college, I was taking, so why this happened, there are explanations for it, but in those days, there was this vart that they were saying in school that if you wanted to go to law school, you should take political science. There was a vart like that. Okay, so I already had a lot of credits for me. See, it was at that time already we were beginning to do stuff like this shtick, it was starting with the credits. Nowadays, you don't have to do anything, it's all shtick. But, so I already had credits, so I thought I was going to be a lawyer. So someone said, you got to take a lot of political science. So it was political science. So I said, just be quiet, you have to sign up for all the political science. Okay, I'll take political science. So I was sitting in on these, so right away, because I wanted to finish up college very quickly, so I took a lot of courses in my major, right? So I should be able to get on with things. So to get to law school. So I took like three classes and I was already like committed to with the credits and all this stuff and I saw from the very beginning, and I don't mean this against any political scientists of the world, but just like I don't mean against the sociologists, nobody should be hurt. But I remember I was sitting there and I was saying I remember feeling like I can't believe I'm doing this. Okay, but then what happened was like this. Let me just tell you. So I wrote the papers. It was all Hollywood. I wrote the papers and I'm taking the exams. But then the ultimate happened. They were trying to form a United Nations team. Like a debating thing, a team, I don't know. Like a club, like a political science club. So one of the, so in the class, you know, it was in yeshiva, so we were the same guys, you know. So in the class, there was this guy that was like the Mr. Political Science, you know, like he was really into it. So he came over to me and says, Moish, can you join us? So I said to him, whatever his name was, Yankee, I said, Ad Khan. I said, I might be a liar, an actor. I might be the biggest fake in the world, and that's why I sit on this stupid class like a moron, spending my whole life listening to some person who's the only bigger moron than me on the earth, who gave his whole life over to talking about this Irish guy, when I'm just doing it to get to someplace else to make some panosa. So now you want me to join like the political science club after class? Are you out of your mind? I'm going to go, this after class. So he says to me, Mike, it looks good on the thing. It looks good. You're going to get into law school. So then he started to think, oh, my parents are going to find out that this could help me get into law school. Then how come I'm not doing it? Because then everybody else is doing it. So he started to think that maybe I should do this, because then my mother's going to get upset with me that I didn't, how come everybody else is doing that? How come why didn't you go to the political science debating United Nations super duper political science club afterwards so you could meet two nights a week and talk about political science after you finish the nonsense in class? You could have more of it at night. But I didn't do it, Baruch Hashem. I didn't do it. I said, no, I'm not doing that. I said, I can't do that. That much I can't do. I'll take the tests. I'll write the papers. But I'm not going with these guys at night. It's bad enough during the day. I'm not going to meet with them at night. It's hard enough for me the whole day. And probably it was the wrong judgment. Because maybe, you know, maybe from a purist's point of view, if you want to be mitzliach, I mean, they get to you like that. You have to be mishtatif in all these inyanim. You have to be mishtatif in the inyan, and you have to show like that it's a big inyan, and that you're part of it, and you have to show that you care about, so the teacher should see. Teachers see that you care like about that whole sheker. Because the teacher cares about the sheker, so you care about the sheker. It's all linda l'shoinim. It's all teaching our mouths to say sheker, and the tmimis and the pashtus. So you know what happens. So from the beginning, from our education, from the time that we're in school, we're taught that sophistication is the road to hatzlacha, and it carries over into our conversations with people too. So we don't know how to just stop that. We don't know how to stop that. So the same one that's doing that in class, that's got to make believe, and has got to write the papers and do well on the test, and or else mommy and daddy are going to be upset, and you know, whatever, Hashem's going to be upset. That's, you know, whatever, I'm not going to get married, you know, or I'm not going to have a future. So all of that carries over into your simple ben adam l'chaveru relationships with people, just how you talk to people. Everything's a test. You're always being tested. You were tested in your math class, your social studies class, and you're being tested in this. You're being interviewed every time you talk to people. You're being interviewed. Somebody's interviewing. So somebody says to you, "How was your weekend?" So this little thing says, "Like, what should I say that will sound clever or cool or funny? What should I say?" So it's all like someone standing next to you with a microphone. So how was your weekend? And straighten your tie out. Fix yourself, put yourself together, and say something cute. Say something funny. And all the pashtus and all the tamimas that we had as children is for foul. So, I don't know if that answers the question. I just think that in our relationships.
Well, it sounds like the Rebbe's agreeing. I was asking, like, what's the way out?
The way out. Okay, we're going to talk more here. We're going to learn more about the way out. Tamimas. And to connect more to pnimius, to take certain times and to exercise, to pick a time of but we're so afraid, because we're afraid of what people will think. And we don't know, we don't even know how to apply it, because it says, what you're saying, I should do what I feel. So right now it's Shabbos morning, I don't feel like going to shul, so I'm going to stay in bed. So now, then I'm going to say, well, I guess that's the pashtus and tmimus of a guy like me. I don't feel like going to shul, so I'm not. But that's, you see, we're so far from it. We have to learn more about the midah of pashtus and tmimus in order to be able to understand how to apply it l'maisa. How to apply it l'maisa. It's a big avodah. It's a very big avodah. What is it then?
on a certain level, I don't know if it's being retrained or whatever, but a person on a certain level is one like an animal, and without learning from the Torah what the purpose of the response is, the instance, a person left to their own behemoth will be terrible. You have to study, my understanding, for marriage, for getting along, for everything, on a certain level, you shouldn't have any natural reactions. You should follow whatever the Torah says.
Right, that's what I was talking about, I think, before you came in. I was saying, of course, that there's not that
no,
doesn't
that
mean
smell thing.
An aveira. I feel like doing an aveira. Of course, our seichel, we have to train, and the whole purpose of Torah is to train ourselves and how to act and how to be. Of course, and that's also part of it. Of course, and how that all works out together, and I'm still able to maintain the tmimis and the pashtus, even though I'm breaking my tether right now, not to give in to my taivis and not to the what I feel like saying or what I feel like doing. Because what the Rebbe's not talking about just doing what you feel like doing, then it's a world of animals, and the Torah is teaching us not to be animals. So all right, we have a lot more to do. We'll continue as Hashem next Shabbos.